Next day, they crossed the summit of the tawny range. In the pass, a hard wind blew, with snow in it, stinging and blinding. It was not until they had come down a long way on the other side, out from under the snow clouds of the peaks, that Tanar saw the land beyond the mountain wall. It was all green, green of pines, of grasslands, of sown fields and fallows. Even in the dead of winter, when the thickets were bare and the forests full of gray boughs, it was a green land, humble and mild. They looked down on it from a high rocky slant of the mountainside. Wordless, Ged pointed to the west, where the sun was getting low behind a thick cream and royal of clouds. The sun itself was hidden, but there was a glitter on the horizon, almost like the dazzle of the crystal walls of the Undertomb, a kind of joyous shimmering off on the edge of the world. "What is that?" the girl said. And he, the sea. Shortly afterward, she saw a less wonderful thing than that, but wonderful enough. They came on a road and followed it, and it brought them by dusk into a village. 10 or 12 houses strung along the road. She looked at her companion in alarm when she realized that they were coming among men. She looked and did not see him. Beside her, in Ged's clothing, and with his gait, and in his shoes, strode another man. He had a white skin and no beard. He glanced at her. His eyes were blue. He winked.
"Will I fool him?" he said. "How are your clothes?"
She looked down at herself. She had on a country woman's brown skirt and jacket and a large red woolen shawl. "Oh," she said, stopping short. "Oh, you are Ged." As she said his name, she saw him perfectly clearly, the dark scarred face she knew, the dark eyes. Yet there stood the milk-faced stranger.
"Don't say my true name before others, nor will I say yours. We are brother and sister, come from Tanakba, and I think I'll ask for a bite of supper if I see a kindly face."
He took her hand, and they entered the village. They left it next morning with full stomachs, after a pleasant sleep in a hayloft.
"Do mages often beg?" asked Tanar, on the road between green fields, where goats and little spotted cattle grazed.
"Why do you ask?"
"Well, you seem to be used to begging. In fact, you were good at it."
"Well, yes, I've begged all my life, if you look at it that way. Wizards don't own much, you know. In fact, nothing but their staff and clothing if they wander. They are received and given food and shelter by most people gladly. They do make some return."
"What return?"
"Well, that woman in the village. I cured her goats."
"What was wrong with them?"
"They both had infected udders. I used to herd goats when I was a boy."
"Did you tell her you'd cured them?"
"No. How could I? Why should I?"
After a pause, she said, "I see your magic is not good only for large things."
"Hospitality," he said. "Kindness to a stranger. That's a very large thing. Thanks are enough, of course, but I was sorry for the goats."
In the afternoon they came by a large town. It was built of clay brick and walled round in the Kargish fashion, with overhanging battlements, watchtowers at the four corners, and a single gate, under which drovers were herding a big flock of sheep. The red tile roofs of 100 or more houses poked up over the walls of yellowish brick. At the gate stood 2 guards in the red-plumed helmets of the God-King's service.
Tanar had seen men in such helmets come once a year or so to the place, escorting offerings of slaves or money to the God-King's temple. When she told Ged that, as they passed by outside the walls, he said, "I saw them too as a boy. They came raiding to Gaunt. They came into my village to plunder it. But they were driven off. And there was a battle down by Armouth on the shore. Many men were killed. Hundreds, they say. Well, perhaps now that the ring is rejoined and the lost rune remade, there will be no more such raiding and killing between the Kargish Empire and the Inner Lands."
"It would be foolish if such things went on," said Tanar. "What would the God King ever do with so many slaves?"
Her companion appeared to ponder this a while. "If the Kargish lands defeated the archipelago, you mean?" She nodded.
"I don't think that would be likely to happen."
"Oh, but look how strong the Empire is, that great city with its walls and all its men. How could your land stand against them if they attacked?"
"That is not a very big city," he said cautiously and gently. "I, too, would have thought it tremendous when I was new from my mountain, but there are many, many cities in Earthsea, among which this is only a town. There are many, many lands. You will see them, Tanar." She said nothing. She trudged along the road, her face set.
"It is marvelous to see them. The new lands rising from the sea as your boat comes towards them. The farmlands and forests, the cities with their harbors and palaces, the marketplaces where they sell everything in the world."
She nodded. She knew he was trying to hearten her, but she had left joy up in the mountains, in the twilit valley of the stream. There was a dread in her now that grew and grew. All that lay ahead of her was unknown. She knew nothing but the desert and the